Don't forget to tip your waitresses. The town where I grew up was decidedly blue-collar, filled with teachers and nurses and the occasional sales manager. My friends and I fell asleep to the sound of our parents arguing about car payments and tuition. It was our soundtrack, this din of worry. If you were old enough, you were expected to have a part-time job. When I was 16, I got one. I was a junior secretary in a podiatrist's office near my house in Burlington. I had to wear a short white skirt, a tight blouse, and high-heeled shoes. This outfit made me look like a teenage nurse, which sounds hot, but I promise you was not. I was a teenager during a period of truly awful style. It made sense that my friends and I all had part-time jobs because we dressed like Melanie Griffith and Working Girl during a long subway commute. Hairspray was king, and the 80s silhouette in Burlington was big hair, giant shoulder pads, chunky earrings, thick belts, and form-fitting stretch pants. My silhouette was an upside-down triangle. Add in my round potato face and hearty eyebrows, and you've got yourself a grade-A boner killer. So remember that before you try to jerk it to my teenage nurse story. Anyway, this other nurse and I used to jump around in our underwear and kiss each other for fun. Oh, wait, what I meant to say was I answered phones and filed things. The best part of my job was leaning into the waiting room and whispering, "The doctor will see you now." It always felt like such a waspy phrase, right up there with, "It truly is my pleasure," and, "We just got back from the country." Every once in a while, we would get an exciting sprained ankle or a flat feet emergency, but usually the patients were just old people who couldn't cut their own toenails anymore. I was a really good waitress. Waitressing takes a certain gusto. You need a good memory and an ability to connect with people fast. You have to learn how to treat the kitchen as well as you treat the customers. You have to figure out which crazy people to listen to and which crazy people to ignore. I loved waiting tables because when you cashed out at the end of the night, your job was truly over. You wiped down your section and paid out your busboy, and you knew your work was done. I didn't take my job home with me, except, you know, for the occasional nightmare where I would wake up in a cold sweat and remember I had never brought Table 14 or Diet Coke. My first waitressing job was in the summer of 1989, a few months before I left for college. I was 17 and sticky. I earned the extra money I needed for textbooks scooping ice cream at Chadwick's, a local parlor that specialized in sundaes and giant steak fries. Chadwick's was in Lexington, Massachusetts, the rich town next door, the Eagleton to our Pawnee. Lexington was the famous home of the shot heard round the world. Burlington was the home of the mall. Lexington, as it turns out, is also Rachel Dratch's hometown, and much later I would learn that she also worked at the same sticky emporium a few years before I did. Imagine if our paths had crossed. Imagine how hilarious we would have been while we shoved toothpicks in the club sandwiches. Think of all the jokes about marrying the ketchups. Ugh, such a waste. Lexington High still plays Burlington High on Thanksgiving Day, and Dratch and I trash text each other. She calls me Burlington garbage, and I tell her to go drive her Mercedes into a lake. In my town, the best way to insult someone was to call them rich and smart, which, looking back, was maybe a little short-sighted of us. You know what? Who cares? Burlington rules. Go Red Devils! Summer jobs are often romantic. The time frame creates a perfect parenthesis. Chadwick's was not. Hard and physical, the job consisted of stacking and wiping and scooping and lifting. At the end of my shift, every removable piece of the restaurant would be carted off and washed. Vinyl booths were searched and scrubbed. This routine seemed Sisyphean at first, but I soon learned the satisfaction of working at a place that truly closed. I took great joy in watching people stroll in after hours, thinking they could grab a late-night sundae. I would point to the dim lights and the stacked chairs as proof that we were shut. It was deliciously obvious and final. Chadwick's was one of those fake old-timey restaurants. The menus were written in swoopy cursive. The staff wore styrofoam boaters and ruffled white shirts with bow ties. Jangly music blared from a player piano as children climbed on counters. If the style of the restaurant was old-fashioned, the parenting that went on there was distinctly modern. Moms and dads would patiently recite every item on the menu to their squirming 5-year-olds, as if the many flavors of ice cream represented all the unique ways they were loved. There was a performance element to the job that I found appealing. Every time a customer was celebrating a birthday, an employee had to bang a drum that hung from the ceiling and play the kazoo and encourage the entire restaurant to join him or her in a sing-along. Other employees would ring cowbells and blow noisemakers. I would stand on a chair and loudly announce, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're so happy to have you at Chadwick's today, but we're especially happy to have Kevin, because it's Kevin's birthday today. So, at the sound of the drum, please join me in singing Kevin a very happy birthday." The appeal didn't last long. I'm not sure when the worm turned. Maybe it was during one of the many times we announced the Belly Buster. The Belly Buster consisted of mounds of ice cream in a giant silver bowl carried in on a stretcher. The busboys would have to pretend to struggle under the weight of this giant sundae as they lifted it onto the table and handed a giant spoon to the maniac who had ordered it. I would ease my pain by exchanging looks with one busboy who was always slightly drunk and the ex-junkie cook who was always slightly grouchy. The cook spoke in bumper stickers when describing his disposition. "Of course I'm mean. It's hard to be happy when you're standing this close to the fire." But the teenagers were the worst, teenage boys especially. They would file in, Adam's apples bouncing, and announce it was their birthdays. And since Chadwick's operated on an honor system, I would have to look into their sweaty, lying faces and smile like a flight attendant. Some of them would order their sundaes while asking me to hold their nuts. I was relieved when I had to leave and head to college. It was time. Besides, I had started forgetting to charge for whipped cream. I was failing to use the ice scoop. A customer told me I was banging the drum too hard. She was right. I was angry. I wanted to be gone. It's important to know when it's time to turn in your kazoo. The nights would end with the waitstaff in the parking lot, sitting on a car and drinking beer as we counted our tips. The boys would undo their bow ties and suddenly look weary and handsome. I would change into soft jeans and throw pennies at the dumpster. I was aching for what came next. I felt my whole life stretched out before me like an invisible buffet. I learned many things banging that drum at Chadwick's. I learned that a good tip is what a decent person leaves. I learned that how a person treats their waitress is a great indication of their character. I learned that chocolate chip ice cream is a bitch to scoop. I learned almost all the people in a working kitchen are having sex with each other, except for the Bangladeshi busboys who are supporting three kids back home and trying not to strangle the awful white teenagers complaining about their summer job. My next restaurant job was in Boston during college at a place called Paparazzi. I was immediately drawn to it because it was a step up from ice cream and also because I love the Paparazzi. I don't care what anyone says. I think the Paparazzi are awesome and they're all great people and I should be allowed to see pictures of anyone I want anytime. Paparazzi introduced me to the world of breadsticks and olive oil. We wore all white like professionals and talked about cavatappi pasta. I had an affair with the bartender and attended wine tastings. I had great abs and I listened to the as we cleaned up. I knew the bartender was fucking someone else at the same time, and I didn't care. I felt very adult. At Paparazzi, I learned that I was actually a great waitress and it was easy money, and everyone was doing cocaine, and that maybe I actually did care about the bartender fucking someone else. Carlucci was a joint in Chicago, and my first foray into the big leagues. My uniform was a smart burgundy vest and floral tie. I looked like a serious waitress who was also capable of performing some light magic. Fine Italian dining was hitting its peak, and Carlucci was a way for upper-middle-class people to spend their Wall Street money. This place was no ice cream joint. It catered to businessmen with fat ties and fatter wallets. We had banquet halls and mise en place. We had a mean Italian chef who gave seminars on homemade grappa. I opened my first bottle of $200 wine. I catered an off-site party for Darcy from the Smashing Pumpkins and smoked with James Iha. Billy Corgan sang in Darcy's living room, and I listened from a closet. Once, I heard a familiar voice in the restaurant, and I turned to see Oprah at a table with what looked like a gaggle of producers. And if my memory serves me correctly, she was giving them presents. I feel like it was diamond earrings. I want that to be true. I feel like Oprah pays all of her employees in diamonds and cashmere pajamas. While I was at Carlucci, I learned how to dust a tiramisu and pair cordials. I learned having a pocket filled with cash is a dangerous thing. I learned that I was getting way too good at a job that was not my life's passion, and I learned that I was the only one not doing cocaine. My last big gig was at a real classy joint called Aqua Grill in New York City. It was 1996, and I had just moved to New York. I wanted a job, so I walked around Soho looking for help wanted signs in the windows. I was called a server by then, and I knew how to navigate the fancier places. I walked into Aqua Grill and began my experience of trying to help a new restaurant get off the ground. The owners were talented and lovely, but I felt like an imposter in all of our pre-opening meetings. I wanted to earn a living as an actor, and I wanted to pay off my student loans and maybe get some health insurance. It would be a long time before those things happened, but they felt close enough to see. Aqua Grill is a beautiful little place with yellow walls and fresh seafood. I finally learned how to save a little money. I learned how to tell the difference between East Coast and West Coast oysters. I waited on people like Ellen Barkin and David Byrne and Lou Reed. I was getting closer to Lou Reed, one step at a time. I waited on restaurant critic Ruth Reichel. She would come in wearing wigs and using a pseudonym. The restaurant got a great review, and she said this. In New York City, home of the fabulous, the chic, the loud, and the exotic, a nice restaurant is a rare thing. So rare that when I encountered the pleasant staff at Aqua Grill, I was acutely uncomfortable. Don't those people ever stop smiling? She was uncomfortable with my smiling. I didn't care. I had made the New York Times. The restaurant opened, and I left soon after, praying that my bi-monthly Conan appearances and piecemeal Comedy Central gigs would sustain me. I was out of the restaurant business, but I still had my appetite. I turned toward my future, mouth-watering.